This is the Freedom Fiends Podcast. I'm A2A, a mile above sea level, and it's a direct curve to the area. Alter your local Cerulean by warming your synapses with regenerative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit squared. You keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, James and Randy? Can you feel it?
Feeling it.
Hi, Lou. Yes.
Yay, feeling we got on the air. We didn't get blocked by the Soros brothers or George Koch.
Yes, well, the show isn't over
yet. Yet.
Yep, we're here.
So what's new and exciting with you guys? James, I haven't talked to you in probably a couple months, and Randy has been... At least a month since the last time we weren't able to get on, or at least two weeks.
It's only been 2 weeks since we were unable to get on.
But so what's going on with Randy England Emeritus?
What's going exciting? Yes. I am no longer the in-house legal counsel for the Freedom Fiends because I'm retired. I think I might have said that last time, unless I was going to, and then we didn't get to finish the show. Had kind of an interesting day today here in Missouri, which is where I live and where I was practicing law until I retired a month and a half ago. We have a freedom-oriented, exclusively freedom-oriented law firm, actually, here in mid-Missouri where I am, and they cover the whole state. And they asked me to join their board of directors today. And I'm kind of stoked about that. It's going to be a lot of fun. They work in areas. It's everything they do is suing the government. It's always suing the government. And that's, if you're going to be involved in the courts of law, heaven's sake, sue the government. And they take on free speech. I should say they, I mean we. Take on free speech issues and economic liberty, property rights stuff like, opposing eminent domain, stuff like that. Anything to dial government down or get back behind government. They sue the government quite a bit about on issues of transparency. We have what's called a sunshine law in Missouri. I'm sure lots of states and the federal government have some freedom of information rules where you can demand that they give you records that aren't closed, I guess you would say. And surprisingly, government agencies, even if records are legally open, they don't want to give those out. They absolutely don't want to, and you have to sue them all the time. We just had a lawsuit finished here in my county through this organization where someone asked for records that they were perfectly entitled to get, and they should have just simply copied them and handed them over. But instead, our local prosecutor said, no, I won't do it. You'll have to get a court order. Well, our sunshine law says that if you have to sue to get the records that they should have given you just for the asking, you'll pay for attorney's fees. And so, in our county right now, it looks like whenever somebody wants to get a sunshine request filled with the local prosecutor, unless he has learned his lesson, and he may, he's going to pay about $25,000 in attorney's fees if the person who doesn't get their records has to sue him for him, because that's what happened this time. And I kind of like that. That's a sting. That's a lot of money, to come out of a county budget, particularly if that's the office's normal policy, which up until this moment has been their policy, that they just refuse the request, get me a court order. We got him one. Kind of cool.
Wasn't there already like court orders with Constitution and previous laws and stuff like that?
Well, there's a law that's passed by the legislature that says if somebody wants records that are what they call open, and they define what's open and what's closed, the legislature does. If it's an open record, then it has to be given up, and no questions asked. The only thing they can do is charge a reasonable copy fee, say. So if they were charging a nickel a sheet for sheets of paper, there wouldn't be a problem. You'd have to pay it. But other than that, they have to give up the records. I mean, it's the whole thing, the whole idea that we should be able to see what the government's doing, which is contrary to the Facebook, the Mark Zuckerberg philosophy that individuals need to be transparent. And Of course, the flip side of that is the government opaque. That's about what we have now. But anyway, we're against that stuff, and I'm just kind of excited to be involved with this thing and doing something worthwhile in my retirement. Besides relaxing, I've been doing a little bit of that too. So what about you guys?
It sounds like a fun hobby to do during your retirement there. Keep the government checked and stuff like that.
Yeah, and like I said, if you have to be involved with the courts in any way, it isn't always a fun thing. But if you limit yourself to suing the government, it can be, more fun.
Yeah. Yeah, those cases got to be fun, suing the government.
Yeah, yeah. And it's part of my purgatory after spending 14 years after a prosecutor. I'm still atoning for my sins.
So does this mean that you'll be maintaining your law license and membership in the Bar Association and all that stuff?
No, I will not. I'm still retired. I will be a non-lawyer member of the board.
Nice.
I mean, you can't forget what you learned. You still have that. But
you're not worried about getting called into the big leagues from the minors or coming out of retirement? You're not going to be like Michael Corleone and see a case.
That's one of the things that I'm happy to not to do. One thing that they do about every other year here in Missouri is they start when the public defenders decide that they're too busy because they've got too many cases in the state, and they are busy. I realize that, but they get their back up and refuse to take any more cases. They say, "Well, we can't ethically take any more cases because we can't take care of the people we have." Which is probably true, because people are always griping about how crappy the public defenders are in this state, and a lot of that has to be due to them having so many cases. How much time can they spend on your case? When they've got, when Randy England walks in the courtroom with 3 files under his arm and the public defender walks in with 100, he can't really,
defend you.
Yeah. They go on strike kind of and say, we won't take any more cases now. And then the judges start threatening to start appointing just Joe Schmo lawyer out there to start representing these people for nothing, just slave labor. They're conscripted. And the last time I was sure it was going to happen, and it didn't get into it because I was going to refuse. I was absolutely not going to do it. I mean, I'd take a case pro bono and help some guy, but I'll be darned if I'm going to be forced to do it. I give up my license, but it never happened. And now they can't get me. The only thing they could do to you, I guess they might be able to throw you in jail for a little while for contempt or something. But if you're willing to give up your license, they're pretty much stuck. They can't make you do it. And now I don't have to do it. They can't do anything to me. I actually have a license until January when my bar dues run out. But if they want the license now, it isn't going to change my life. So I guess I'm not worried about it anymore. I'm not practicing.
So has anybody considered not arresting so many people and charging them and creating all this work for public defenders?
No, don't be silly. We're building new prisons. We need to fill them, at least in our state. It's a tradition and a long one. We've been a state since 1820, and we've had more capacity in our prisons every single year, and with little inclination to. About 4 years ago, they passed a whole revamped criminal code that was supposed to, cut down the stress on our prisons and that. Hadn't done a thing. They're still down the road from me. They're building a $200 million prison for women because our women are getting more and more out of hand, apparently. And so we need more space for them.
Sounds like they like arresting people down there.
Yes. Yes, but they do just about everywhere. At least in the United States, we've got quite a bit more than our share of the prisoners of Earth. Something like 25% of the inmates on Earth are in our United States, which has 5% of the population.
Yeah, we got it with a quarter of the world's prison population.
Yeah, it's a proud record. It's a proud record and not one that Stalin or Hitler could have matched. So, of course,
well, if they wouldn't have executed all those people, they might have.
If they put them all in jail, maybe they would have. So, you know, I shouldn't be too harsh on our government, because even though they lock people up, you know, sometimes for a very, very long time, they at least don't kill them while they're in there. Most of them they don't kill.
Well, in some states.
So thank heaven for small favors that they
actually, Randy, I wanted to share a little bit of history with you.
Yes.
Of your great state of Missouri.
Give it to me.
And there was a time when they were trying to relieve pressure on the prisons, or I assume they were, but they said, you know, hey, let's solve this problem of too many people being in prison. And they came up with a creative way to do it. It was by executive order. It was called the Missouri Executive Order Number 44. It was also known as the Mormon Extermination Order, or the Missouri Extermination Order.
Well, this would have been back when Missouri was only 10 or 15 years old, I suspect.
Yeah.
Or 20 years old, I don't know.
The executive order was issued on October 27th of 1838. The governor of Missouri, Lilburn Boggs. The order was issued in the aftermath of the Battle of Crooked River, a clash between Latter-day Saints and a unit of the Missouri State Militia in northern Ray County, Missouri. I think they mean a police department. Back then, I think they were honest enough to call them militias. Anyway.
Well, what year was that?
1838.
They probably didn't have police then, probably.
No. No. The cops didn't come to America until the mid-1800s.
Yeah, so it was just the militia.
Yeah. We'll be back.
We will.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Randy England Emeritus and James Weeks II. So, before we went to break, we were discussing the Missouri Executive Order Number 44, also known as the Missouri, the Extermination Order. And this was government cutting down on jail space. In 1838, the governor of Missouri, Mr. Lilburn Boggs, signed the order. And it was issued in the aftermath of the Battle of Crooked River, a clash between Latter-day Saints and a unit of the Missouri State Militia in northern Ray County, Missouri, during the 1838 Mormon War, claiming that Latter-day Saints had committed open and avowed defiance of the law and had made war upon the people of Missouri. Probably a little hyperbolic. Maybe they didn't sign up for Boggs care. But anyway, Governor Boggs directed that the Mormons must be treated as enemies and must be exterminated or driven from the state if necessary for the public peace.
There was an option there between leaving or dying, right?
Yeah, and I understand that the militia members were going around chanting, Mormons will not replace us, Mormons will not replace us. Whose streets? Our streets. Their outrages are all beyond all description.
Were they carrying tiki torches?
I don't know.
And they responded that all lives mattered when the Mormons said that Mormon lives matter. I'm sure. Yes.
Yeah. Well, in the militia, they started shouting "Blue Coat Lives Matter." So
they had already had an extremely tumultuous time in the state. I think that they started out in Kansas City or outside of Kansas City in Independence, Missouri, and they ended up, and that was where I think Joseph Smith said that it was going to be the New Jerusalem for whatever they're centered at Independence, Missouri, and then they got driven out of there. I think up north. I'm trying to think when I lived down there.
So they couldn't have their independence, is what you're saying?
Well, yeah. Well, no. Once Joseph Smith declared the spot where the New Jerusalem would be and the temple and all that, that has apparently, somebody still owns, a Mormon sect, I think, still owns that property down there in Independence. And Independence is considered a really important place in Mormon geography. Is that the word? Theology? I don't know. But they got driven out of there, and I think up to like Liberty, that's a good name. Liberty, Missouri. It's in Clay County. And up to there, and then they got driven further out. I don't know. They ended up finally getting driven out of every place they went to until it came to this order, I think.
So they sought independence and no dice. They sought liberty, and it wound up with a extermination order. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of feel bad for the Mormons.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was kind of, somebody it mentioned is. This to me a couple of weeks ago or something, and, said, well, how bad y'all treated the Mormons. And I have to agree, we did. But I was thinking that.
You're not that old.
Well, yeah.
You're old, but not that old.
They did not exterminate them. They drove them out and drove them to Illinois, where they killed, Joseph Smith was finally killed. So I'm thinking Illinois was kind of rougher than Missouri in the end. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, they were put on the killer capture list or the killer get out list. You don't have to leave, but we'll kill you.
Yeah, but what do you
think? That's not a good list to be on.
You're going to leave. But you can go over there. You know, you cross the Mississippi River, and you're over there at, I think it's Nauvoo is the name, and that's a, kind of an important place. I think that's where Joseph Smith was killed in some kind of a shootout, I guess.
So if these folks don't leave Missouri, then it means that they consent to be murdered, right? Because they had a choice.
That's a social contract, right?
It's voluntary, yeah.
It's voluntary, yeah. Social contract.
Implied powers.
If they didn't like it, they could just leave. They don't like being murdered.
So anyway, yeah. But the thing that I was wanted to get at was that this didn't really impact the state of our prisons here, because there was no danger of the Mormons being imprisoned here. We were not going them in jail.
No, if anything, it would have had an impact on the mass grave industry.
Yes, the Undertakers could have done a land sale business. Well, it didn't here. It didn't happen. They went back to Illinois. And then finally,
it was repealed in 1976. West. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Well, the good news is Lincoln probably won't be coming back to bother you guys anymore. And we are back with the Freedom Fiends. So, James, what's new in your world?
Oh, it's all the same. Everything's always the same.
So no extermination orders or anything in history to talk about?
No extermination orders. I mean, the only real, like, we can talk about Michigan history, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
There's nothing really that I know of happened in Michigan. I mean, unless you want to count Michigan, you know, sacking Toledo, but
yeah, well, that wouldn't have been a very nice thing.
Yeah, but that was what Michigan was still a territory. And that's how the UP became part of Michigan. Part of a deal with Michigan sacked Toledo, captured Toledo. The federal government stepped in and made Michigan give Toledo back to Ohio, and as part of the deal, gave Michigan the UP, which is how you're still in Michigan, Lou.
Yes, instead of Southern Canada.
Yeah. Lucky you.
Well, it was part of Wisconsin then. Wisconsin got the short end of the stick.
Yeah, you know, does that play into, are you familiar with the whole Free State of Superior thing?
I've heard of that. Well, UP wants to become its own state.
Yeah, the talk was cutting off the top part of the mitten. I'm not sure where the line would be on that. The UP and then part of Wisconsin forming a separate state, a 51st state.
Yeah, there's been talks about stuff like that for years that I've heard.
Well, yeah, but while you're seceding from Michigan, you ought to secede from the Union too, and then
that's what I've always supported. Yeah. Personally, I think that Michigan, I think that the Great Lakes region should actually secede and form its own country.
Well,
so Michigan, you know, and the whole area around the Great Lakes, basically, and take all the water with us.
and then you would vow allegiance to that new country,
take some of Southern Canada. Well, I just think it'd be funny to just take all the water.
I wonder if it would be the People's Republic of Chicago.
Well, no, it wouldn't be People's Republic of Chicago. I mean, you got a whole bunch of other area coming with it, not just Chicago. But yeah, Chicago would be included in this area.
Yeah, the water wouldn't do you any good unless you sold it, though. You don't need that much.
Well, we do.
I mean, we don't need it down here. We have plenty of water because we have rivers, but some people might need that water.
We will use.
Well, yeah, that's what's going on right now. They got the federal government and stuff, and different state governments are selling the water to be taken from this area and shipped all over the place. So that's why I think it'd be funny to just take the water.
Oh. Yeah, we'll use any way we see fit. We'll bathe in it if we want to. Yeah.
You said they ship it. Do they ship it in ships, and does some of it end up in Arizona or something, or? I'm thinking desert places would need it.
Yeah, desert places could need it, but
I'm thinking a lot of it winds up in bottles.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of water bottling plants and stuff here that they just take it right out of the Great Lakes or various springs and stuff like that. And they take a lot of water to use for like hydraulic fracking as well out of our water.
Hey, you had a law passed in Michigan that was good this past year.
Wait, what? Good law.
No. Yeah, there was I was mentioning earlier about the Freedom Center of Missouri, which I'm on their board now. And one of the things that they do is sue government agencies that don't comply with Freedom of Information requests, or what we call our Sunshine Act. And there's an article I ran into said government turned tables by suing public records requesters. It's become popular in many states, and it had become popular in Michigan. Hasn't happened in our state, but government agencies are basically said, if you receive a request, you look at the request, and if it's requesting something that you're required to give up under the law, you just give it up, and that's it. And in Missouri, they don't always give it up. A lot of them don't give it up, but then you can sue them, and if you were right, you get all your attorney's fees back, plus you get the documents you wanted. But what the government agencies are doing in many states now is that the moment they get a request for records, they immediately file a lawsuit against the person who requested it. which can turn out to be a very expensive proposition in that, and it's super scummy thing to do, and the law does not provide for it, but they do it. It gets into court, and now your records are in limbo for a year or more, whatever it takes to get the thing sorted out.
Well, they just don't want you to have records.
This happened in Michigan, but just this last year up there, is it a bicameral legislature? You have a Senate and a House, or
yeah, we have a Senate and a House.
Okay, well, I don't know what your Senate did, but the State House voted. What?
You don't have a Senate. No.
Well, your State House voted 108-0 in favor of a bill that would make it illegal for agencies to sue public records requesters. Because somebody requested some file, a local newspaper requested some files, and they just immediately responded to the request with a lawsuit, and this was in response to that. So that, you know, like I said, that's a pretty important thing, that government, you be able to get in and look at government, because everything they do, they want to do in the dark. I mean, that's what rats do, and... you know, to shine the light on these cockroaches is, you know, one of the only defenses, you know, that you have. So that's something I thought was good for Michigan. And that's James.
There are some things that they've done in recent times that have been okay. I mean, they gave us the ability to, well, I guess they gave us kind of the right to have a switchblade back earlier this year as well. And there's been talks about getting rid of the requirement to have a concealed carry license to be able to carry a pistol. However, it seems like that, last I heard, it only passed one of their legislatures, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere in the next one. So we'll see what happens with that. But we're able to have a switchblade as long as it meets, you know, the other requirements of knife law in Michigan. So that's okay.
That's good. You're not running for anything at the moment, are you?
Office. Yeah, I plan on running for U.S. Senate.
Very good. As the farcical party candidate or something, or is it the Libertarian?
Yeah, close. Same thing.
Yeah, I know that. I know. Yeah.
But I plan on it. I mean, the Libertarian Party of Michigan does not want me involved. So, what better way to not be involved than to be the Senate candidate? They really wanted to have this whole primary party status to where I'm able to just get signatures to get on the ballot now instead of, you know, going through the party process through.
It's not like you would do anything to embarrass them.
But we'll see how that goes. Big thing is now there's signature requirements that have been imposed on the candidates to have to get on the ballot. So got to get 15,000 signatures to get on the ballot, and of course getting the petitions is turning out to be a whole nother chore, because apparently they want to make it really hard for you to be able to run for office.
Freedom
you're
of
not
petitioning
going to get
Act.
15,000, you're going to need a lot of help for that, aren't you?
Yeah, probably going to need some volunteers. But so far, I'm the only one from the party that has decided to run for Senate. So as far as it goes, I'm the Senate candidate. But so I don't know. We'll see if I even get on the ballot. Probably not.
Will you be able to still do the show? Because aren't there like election laws about having a radio show or stuff like that while running for office?
Yeah, you're supposed to be on the radio more when you're running for office.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to be on the radio more.
As a guest, but not as a host.
I don't know if there's anything like that.
I don't know if there is. I guess I'd have to look that up. Have there been media personalities that ran for office that you can recall? I'm trying to think.
Well, Kid Rock's running. that's what made me want to he goes out, he has concerts and stuff. I don't know.
Senator Camacho.
Yeah, that's going to be kind of crazy. That's what made me want to run for Senate, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I when I watched that, I was like, my God, this is just absolutely ridiculous. And I absolutely could not believe it. And
what are we talking about now?
Oh, Kid Rock's, apparently he's not actually running. It was just him flapping his gums.
Well, that's the thing, though.
Is he
violating the campaign laws, though, because he is giving campaign speeches and he's selling, you know, Kid Rock for Senate, merchandise and stuff like that. So he's in this area where he needs to, because he just hasn't filed his paperwork yet. But he needs to file his paperwork, or he's probably going to end up getting himself in trouble with, you know, his, which is obviously probably just a publicity stunt. But okay, because of, you know, doing this publicity stunt and what he's done, he's pretty much he's forcing himself to have to run at this point, because he's already campaigning, you know, he's already selling, you know, Kid Rock for Senate merchandise and stuff like that. So he's kind of backed himself into a corner where he's going to force himself to have to run, which is going to be great because I really want to debate him, which is the entire reason why I decided I was going to try and throw my ring in the head, you know, for Senate. So we'll see what happens with that. If Kid Rock doesn't get it, I'm probably not going to run or anything like that. But as long as Kid Rock's in the race, I'm going to, you know, kind of just say, hey, guys, I guess I'm going to run too. But we'll see what happens with that. I just really want to debate Kid Rock.
I guess I'm going to run is probably not a formal declaration then.
Well, I haven't, you know, got ballots or, you know, petitions or filed any paperwork or anything like that. I'm not collecting donations. I'm not really out campaigning or anything. I just want to debate Kid Rock. That's really what I want to do.
Even if you try, you'll violate lots of campaign laws. No one can possibly keep them. They're insane.
It's going to be a humor show. Meow.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of driving your kids to Gigi Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where Gigi took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the Gigiest place on Earth. Gigi always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to Gigi's grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll Mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find Gigi Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, MeowBit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating Gigi Allen's face.
Quotation marks in my voice. Our president, the Grand Cheetolini, Donald Trump recently addressed the United Nations, and contrary to early reports, he was not smacking a shoe down on the desk like Khrushchev. But anyway, he addressed the UN, and there's a lot of people. There's a meme going around. He says that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was talking about Venezuela, and he says that socialism, meaning state socialism, has not been, improperly implemented. It's been faithfully implemented in Venezuela. So a lot of these Trump fans are getting real excited about that. And yeah, it's a good quote. It was because state socialism. If you look at the results of state socialism through the entire 20th century, in the modern times, and you compare it to the technological innovations out there, because I mean, when it comes to basic technology, there's not a country on earth that they don't have access to this stuff. You know, modern machinery for digging stuff, and for some reason, with all the technological advancements that have come out over the past 100 years or more, the results of state socialism are always the same: starvation. I mean, they're not even starving differently; they're starving the same way that they did in the Soviet Union. But anyway, people are really excited about that, and it's a good line. And Trump's kind of like the broken clock that's right twice a day, and everybody's acting like, oh, well, it's a beautiful clock. It's a perfect clock. If I was going to make a broken clock, it would look just like Donald Trump. So anyway, but he's been saber rattling.
Why would you want to make a broken clock, though?
Yeah, because
it would be right twice a day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, think about it. There are working clocks that are never right, like if they're slow or fast.
Mm-hmm. None of my clocks are right ever during the day because they're not perfect.
Well, you need atomic clocks. But anyway,
well, except my atomic clock, of course.
So a broken clock could be right 2 more times than a functioning clock. Hmm. Am I right?
Exactly, two more times.
Depending on the clock. Or you could just have a clock that works properly and is correct.
And is set correctly.
If you live in a country under state socialism like Venezuela, you probably don't have access to that.
No, crippling economic sanctions would keep that from happening.
Or you ate it.
Now, do you applaud his remarks on socialism, or are you more turned on by the fact that he called Kim Jong-un Rocket Man?
I didn't hear that.
I love these two guys because, you know, Kim Jong-un is saying stuff. You know what reminds
me? He's saying stuff that's Kim Jong-un American.
Yeah, but it reminds me of the crazy things that Saddam Hussein said before we invaded and killed him. And
you were in Iraq.
What?
You were in Iraq.
Oh, I paid for that with my tax dollars, damn it. I get credit.
I don't know if I'd want credit.
Yeah, I don't really. But I did pay for it. I'm still smarting about that, actually.
North Korea responded to Trump's comments on calling Kim Jong-un a rocket man and saying that they'd totally destroy North Korea. But, you know, the thing is, the North Korean, we had the North Korean foreign minister, Ri Yong-ho, he said that Trump sounds like, Trump's threats, it was the sound of a dog barking. And when he was asked about the Rocket Man nickname, he said that, I feel sorry for his aides. The North Korean foreign minister just completely wrecked Trump.
Well, you know, I think that a lot, too. Who doesn't feel sorry for Donald Trump's aides?
I feel sorry for him, too.
Except his aides that are billionaires.
Does he have aides?
Inheritance laws.
Does he have aides? Can you verify that?
Well, he has aides.
Can you make that claim on radio?
The double entendre? Sorry, I feel sorry for his aides.
The devil, you know, entendre?
The thing about Trump being, his threat being the sound of dog barking, it goes on to explain that references a North Korean proverb that a procession moves even if dogs bark, which I don't think is that telling, really. But
I'm in break.
He said that... We went out.
I never even heard the music.
No. Are we on the air? Someone.
And live.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
This is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Randy England, and we're broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And with me here in the second hour are Lou and James. Gentlemen,
yo.
Are you there?
We're here.
Howdy.
Howdy.
And we're finished poking fun at Kim Jong-un. So there was an article, I think, that Lou brought to our attention about a suspect in a Starbucks robbery, if I have this right, that may be going to sue the Good Samaritan fellow who stopped him from robbing the Starbucks. And do you have that in front of you, Lou?
I do. This comes to us from FoxNews.com. Starbucks robbery suspect may sue Good Samaritan who subdued him. Dun, 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 dun. The mother of a man who police said attempted to rob a Starbucks in California but was thwarted by a Good Samaritan reportedly said her son plans to sue because a hero used excessive force. The video of the July robbery went viral. Police released the footage showing Craig Jerry, 58, struggling with a would-be robber in a Transformers mask who tried to stage a holdup with a knife and toy gun at a Starbucks in Fresno.
I think that's where the guy went wrong right off the bat, is Transformer mask and a toy gun.
It's just sticking with the theme. But anyway, Jerry at one point approaches a robber from behind and bashes him over the head with a chair. You know what? With the costumes and all this stuff, I'm seeing pro wrestling here. But anyway, eventually the two hit the ground and grapple. Police said Jerry was stabbed in the neck as he tried to take the knife. Well, at least he wasn't shot with a toy gun.
Yep.
That they said when Jerry took the knife away, he stabbed the robber several times. Police said Ryan Flores, 30, was the man in the mask. The guy, in my opinion, went from a Good Samaritan to a vigilante, Pamela Chimianti, Forrest's mother, told KSCE TV. Stabbing somebody that many times, it doesn't take that many stab wounds to get somebody to succumb to you. Well, if you want to...
Should have shot him 17 times, which is exactly the number of rounds that Glock would hold, right?
Yeah. Well, if he didn't want to get stabbed so many times, maybe he should have brought a toy knife with the toy gun. So anyway, Mark Flores, the man's father, told the Fresno Bee, "I understand he," meaning his son, "robbed the store, but Jerry stabbed my son 17 times.
after he gave up 17 times? Or was he fighting him?
I think he only gave up one time. But anyway,
he gave up after being stabbed 17 times.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Sounds about right. So the Fresno police chief reportedly called the report of the lawsuit ludicrous. Flores, who is currently in jail, did not confirm the lawsuit to the Fresno Bee. "I don't like to judge people, but that's a lot of stab wounds," he said.
Okay. This guy is crazy. I mean, if he didn't want to get stabbed 17 times, maybe he should have gave up after getting stabbed one time.
Or if he didn't want to get stabbed at all, he didn't have to bring the knife.
Yeah, he could have brought a toy.
Or he could have brought a toy knife.
Or he didn't have to rob the Starbucks. Now, at first, when I heard that somebody in line went and stabbed somebody that was further ahead in line, I thought that the person was ordering some kind of half-calf triple soy latte with artificial creamer and non-dairy sweetener and all that other junk.
What if he was robbing the store for a non-calf, half-calf, non-dairy latte with extra soy creamer or whatever you
said? Then he would be trendy.
trendy robber.
And, yeah, and there was no sound, so you couldn't hear what he said.
It seems like a weird store. The whole thing's just weird. For one, I understand, the appeal to be a good Samaritan, but he didn't know. I mean, there's no way that he knew the gun was a toy anyway. And all, this guy comes armed with a chair to a guy that has a knife and what appeared to be a gun. The guy's lucky to be alive.
Oh, if it had been a cop, this guy'd have been dead.
Well, if it would have been a cop, the guy would have been dead. Yeah.
Now, when you say lucky be the guy was lucky to be alive, whom are you speaking of, James?
I'm speaking of the Good Samaritan here. Yeah, okay. he comes armed with a chair to what appears to be a gunfight. This seems kind of like a death wish almost.
Well, the chair, he whacked him pretty good though. I mean, it looked like he thought maybe he might take him down with it. He didn't.
He didn't, no. I mean, he didn't. But you don't bring a chair to a gun or a knife fight.
You don't bring a knife to a toy gun fight either.
No, you just don't. Yeah.
But I have to say.
It's funny that he ended up, you got him. He ended up getting stabbed in the neck over it. So that's what I'm kind of worried about. I want to know about his condition after that being stabbed in the neck thing.
I'm wondering if he's going to countersue the robber for excessive force in a robbery by stabbing him. Because the proper amount of force would have been to surrender. Anything beyond that is excessive.
No, there's no way it could be excessive because the robbery was unsuccessful. Obviously, he did not bring enough persuasion to the Starbucks to get his money. So it wasn't excessive, not for a robber.
Did Starbucks surrender though? Because maybe Starbucks surrendered. Maybe he did bring the proper amount of force.
The guy was up there trying to rob this gal that you can see from behind. She's the clerk is there and hadn't turned over any money yet.
But did she surrender though? Was she going to turn over the money?
I don't think you could tell.
Yeah, there's really no way to tell that. And she's not going to admit that she was going to turn over the money.
Well, she might. She might have to admit that to keep her job.
It depends on store policy, though. I think there's some stores that are just turn over the money.
Yeah, the guy is trying to get her to take a yellow bag to put the money in the video. And while he's trying to get her to the bag, the guy comes up and starts whacking him over the back of the head with a chair.
Yeah, the guy's lucky that this Jerry guy didn't have like a concealed carry going on there, because Jerry probably would have shot him.
Yeah. All he had was a chair.
All he had was a chair, though.
A rather weak one at that.
Yeah, because he probably would have shot him 17 times. That was if he had a gun. Stabbed him 17 times. But it's weird that they're talking about, suing this guy. Like, you're suing the guy for, where's that? How do you sue a guy for stopping a robbery? But we'll see what happens there. There's video of it. I don't know where the video is, though. I'd like to actually watch the full video instead of just the screen.
Yeah, it's on there. But, anybody can file a petition in court and you would just say, you're allowed to use whatever force is reasonable to stop the aggression, but I guess the guy is going to allege that the force was excessive.
It would only be excessive if he had surrendered previous to, if he continued on after he surrendered, maybe you could have an argument of excessive force.
Yeah, sure. That'd be reasonable. Yeah.
But if the Good Samaritan would have shouted stop resisting, then he'd have been covered.
Well, if the Good Samaritan loses, it will be because he forgot to say stop resisting.
It'll also be because he forgot to be a cop.
The other thing he could have done was what cops will do if they see somebody with a knife, even if they're not bothering anybody, maybe they're just whittling. The cop will yell, drop the knife, drop the knife, drop the knife, and then fill you full of holes.
Yeah.
Because they're supposed to say, when a cop sees you with a weapon that you're not bothering anyone with, they apparently are supposed to tell you to drop it. And if you don't drop it within superhuman speed, you're dead.
Yeah, he was trying to, I'm watching the video, he was trying to hit knock him out with the chair. It just didn't go out very well.
Yeah.
Didn't go very well.
If he had to do it over again, he'd have probably swung harder.
Yeah, probably.
But then he survived it, so maybe he wouldn't do it over again at all.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was kind of interesting. You'd like to see the good guy win.
Yeah.
Of course, if he doesn't win, I mean, if he gets sued, that would be really bad, because then he'd be wasting plenty of money on lawyers that no one is going to reimburse him for.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about a lawsuit is, even, you know, if you're sued, even if you win, you still got all those legal fees that you had to pay. You still had to hire your lawyer and all that stuff, unless you countersue for that. But
yeah, well, you can't get your legal fees in most places. For defending yourself against a lawsuit for assault, you know, or using force or something, you're pretty much stuck.
Yeah.
So that guy's gonna
end up having to pay a bunch of money now. Lawyers are gonna win this. No matter what happens, lawyers win this.
Lawyers always win.
It's like an election. No matter who you vote for, government always wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No matter what happens in a lawsuit, lawyers always win.
So what has been the history of this, from your knowledge, Randy, of people being sued for doing what would generally be considered the right thing and intervening and stuff like this? I know there's been numerous cases where homeowners have been successfully sued for harming burglars, and they've wound up having to pay damages because of that.
It's always going to be based on using unreasonable or excessive force. And it's possible that, what was the one about the guy who caught the two burglars inside his house, came home and caught them, and then got them, you know, basically subdued and, you know, had them dead to rights, had his gun on them, and then just proceeded to simply kill them, you know, because it's my right, you're in my house robbing me and now you're dead, bang. You might get the same thing if somebody's coming in the window and was stuck there and you said, just a minute, I'll get my machete and cut your head off. You might not get away with that.
Bring out
the
game.
Back.
We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. I love the Freedom Fiends. But in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends, woof woof. This is Lou, and I am joined by Randy England Emeritus and James Weeks II. And we are back. So, Randy, you have come up with some information that is rather interesting. I'd never heard of this until you brought it up, And I have to wonder what's going on. It looks like some people are fleeing America.
They are. But they're having to leave the country. Have to leave the country or give up their occupation, basically. And an article from, this is actually a few weeks ago, but the article is called Seattle Seahawks Flee America for Medical Treatment. And this followed on a tweet that went out saying that the coach, Pete Carroll, said that Tyler Lockett, Luke Jekyll, Michael Bennett, Michael Wilhoit, and Cliff Avril all gone for Regenokine procedure this week. And what that is referring to is a procedure that this was in the news, I think, probably maybe in 2012 when this thing maybe just started, a procedure that was developed in Germany where they take the take your blood, just not a whole lot, you know, maybe a cup of it or something, or half a cup, I don't know what it is, but they treat the blood, they do something with it, they warm your blood up, and it does something to the blood, causes it to separate out into certain factors, and I think then they centrifuge it to separate the parts of the blood, and there's a layer in there that is real dense and has agents that they say are really good at stopping the degeneration of joints. And these athletes that have bad arthritis in their joints and knees and stuff because of the injuries that they've had, that this supposedly repairs it, and it using the body's own substances, whatever the I think there's something called interleukin or something, or something that affects interleukin, and this serum gets injected in there, and apparently this is really shaking up the whole sports medicine scene, because the FDA will not permit it in this country, and insurance will not pay for it. It became popular when Kobe Bryant flew to Germany for the treatment, which he credited with allowing him to continue playing basketball. They claim the treatment has a 90% success rate, and in Europe, the treatment has been found to be safe and effective, as they call it. But in the United States, the FDA's regulations stand in the way of it being used.
But can we really trust a third world banana republic like Germany?
Like Germany, yeah. Well, you know, everyone knows that they can't.
Or maybe do England.
Any, the proof. It would seem that
you can't trust those islands.
Well, no, because they're all by themselves, like islands are.
Although England does have a red, white, and blue flag, so they're not all bad. But anyway. And interestingly enough, about 10% of the team's roster has gone overseas to get ready for the 2017 season. A lot of people have a tendency, and they like to talk about the sports or the athletes and things, you know, people like that. But I wonder what sort of an impact this would have on just like the regular common person out there, somebody like me who deals with osteoarthritis.
Yeah, I mean, my joints, I'm feeling the fact that I'm getting old, and if imagine, you know, if the price, if it was available here and it only cost, you know, a couple thousand bucks to do, it's a lot cheaper than a knee or hip replacement, right?
Well, yeah, they're not going to let letting it in here, though. So you'd have to fly over to, you know, Europe to get this treatment done, which makes it extremely expensive for you, especially since your insurance is
covering it. Well, it's not only that. It's the expense of the travel and all of that, but if it was here and accepted, it would probably be covered by your health insurance.
Well, if it was accepted, yeah, but it's not going to get FDA accepted. You know, they're not going to want to do that because it works, apparently.
Maybe it would be better if it wasn't covered by health insurance.
Well, it'd probably be better if the prescription companies wouldn't be losing out at the end of this because, you know, those pain pills, you know, that's big money stuff.
Yeah, there nobody wants to touch it here because it would be too much trouble to get it past the FDA, and as it stands, they cannot
meow,
use it.
Meow, meow.
Yeah. But we'll be back then. With
you're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space. You're special. You're better than those geeky nerds who use Android phones. They think they're so smart. But you're one of the beautiful people who has an iPhone. So the Freedom Fiends moved heaven and earth to make an iPhone app just for you. iPhone users are elite, and the Freedom Fiends know this. And we've handcrafted this artisanal app just for you. It's gorgeous, like you. And like you, it's functional and then some. The app is free, and it's called Freedom Reeducation Camp. Go to iTunes and get Freedom Reeducation Camp today, because you inspire joy feelings in everyone around you. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp. Spend some time today in Freedom Reeducation Camp. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp.
Freedom Fiends, and we're back from the market, and in the last segment we were talking about the 10% of the Seattle Seahawks had to go overseas to get medical treatment to keep their careers alive, to get ready for the 2017 season. And we're talking about the procedure called Regenokine, which has not been approved by the FDA, but more and more seems to work. Would that be the right word, Lou?
Yeah. A little side note to the article. This is on Mises.org, and being that they are libertarians, at first I thought there was a little faux pas in there because libertarians are not known for their knowledge of the different sports ball games. Anyway, the article starts off, baseball may still identify as America's pastime, but every year, talking about the Seahawks, I'm like, the Seahawks are a football team, even I know that. But then it says, but then it goes into, talking about football is a country's true love. So anyway, off of that little side note. But you had mentioned that if it was FDA approved and it would be allowed here in the U.S., then it would probably be covered by insurance. And maybe that's not such a good thing. If you look at LASIK and laser eye surgery, to correct vision issues, and then you also look at the plastic surgery, the breast implants, and all these different things. These are things that are generally not covered under insurance. They're generally a cash business, or you go and you set up your little payment plan. But because you don't have the third party payer with the deep pockets there, the prices have to be kept low. One of the other stories that we're going to be talking about in a minute, you were saying that something could be that the price of something could be $1 million and then only the rich could afford it. Well, when only the rich can afford it, you've just eliminated a vast majority of your potential sales.
Yes, but how are you going to stop insurance from covering it? Are you going to use government to stop that? Because I probably am
No, Randy, under my insurance. Don't make me set your straw man on fire here. I'm not advocating the government do that. What I'm saying is, the world would be better off if it wasn't covered under insurance, which means that it probably will be covered under insurance.
Because we get worse and worse?
Yeah.
Well, if people wanted it under insurance, I mean, it would be covered under some insurance, I would assume. And you could get it or not.
But Trump will probably make it covered under insurance.
Yeah, although I would think that if it was very effective, perhaps it would be cheaper than the conventional treatments that are now used, which obviously are so ineffective that professional athletes refuse to use them available.
I mean, they can't be all doped up on pain pills while they're playing football, you know?
Cowboys.
Yeah. No, and the surgery in this country, the procedure is called orthokine. And if you go to the Wikipedia page, there's a long list of not just athletes, but a lot of athletes that have gotten the procedure. And there's a whole mess of them. So the word is out. And it makes you wonder. And the procedure has been, whatever agencies do this in Europe. And what I would love is that if there was some agency, not the FDA, but something like
Underwriters Laboratories.
Yeah, like Underwriters Lab, UL, who would attach their tag to your leg, you know, saying that it was, you know, this is good. We've looked at it and we're happy with it, and that would be great certification. Leave the government out of it.
Tattoo a UL on the side of your kneecap.
Yeah, but apparently in Germany,
kind of a right to try thing here. That's a big thing, is that they don't have something like that. You know, especially for like life-saving stuff.
Did you hear Mary Ruart talk about this at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, James?
No, I missed Mary Ruart's talk. No, unfortunately,
she talked about the right to try laws that they put in, and she said they're a total joke. That Congress passed a way around this thing where you'd have the right to do it. He said it required. Did you hear this, Lou?
Was it
something like 40 hours or 20 hours of pay? I think it was 20, maybe. I could be wrong, but it was ridiculous. 20 hours of paperwork that your physician had to sit down and fill out.
Yeah, no physician
for you to
do that.
Do the right. And she said nobody anywhere does this. It's in the books and nobody could use it. Yeah, so it's a nothing.
Well, the big thing is there's you have these prohibitions against trying these different things, and you know, maybe I'm a jerk for saying that people are being treated like guinea pigs, but it's their lives. They should be able to try these things. One of the craziest things on earth is to say that a terminally ill patient can't try an experimental treatment because it might harm them. And this is the type of idiotic crap that you get out of the FDA and everybody else. But more importantly, the long-term benefits to this is when you have these trial things, when you're trying these other options that are out there, and that's going to benefit an awful lot of people down the road, even if all you do is exclude that as a possibility.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this has been in widespread use in Germany since 2003, with most of the patients saying that it works.
Yeah, and a related story to this, this comes to us from MSN.com. Dr. Oz was recently on Fox and Friends, and he appears to talk about Ivanka Trump, because I guess he did an interview with her about postpartum depression, but his rant on medical marijuana hypocrisy steals the show. Dr. Mehmet Oz made an appearance on Fox and Friends Tuesday morning to promote his interview with Ivanka Trump, but instead drifted into an impassioned rant on the hypocrisy around medical marijuana. Oz's sit-down with the White House senior advisor is set to air on the Dr. Oz show on Thursday, and teasers show Trump discussing how she suffered from postpartum depression. As Oz's interview wound down, co-host Ainsley Earhart asked about Ivanka's stress level and about stress in America. After a while, won't our country get sick of the negativity? Earhart asked. When we do get to the point as a country where we say we can't do this, well, first of all, you need to quit saying as a country. Oz agreed with Earhart, and co-host Brian Kilmeade then appeared to attempt to wrap the interview by tying this to the opioid epidemic, at which point Oz seized the opportunity to talk about, of all things, medical marijuana. Can I just say something? Oz jumped in. The real story is a hypocrisy around medical marijuana. As the host stared, Oz continued. You think that somebody would have left something in the bowl. But anyway, I don't mean the pot bowl.
This is a great line.
People say marijuana is a gateway drug to narcotics. It may be the exit drug to get us out of the narcotic epidemic. Wow, said co-host Steve Ducey. we're not allowed to study it because it's a Schedule I drug, which goes back to the previous story about these things not being allowed to happen here in America. Mm-hmm. Oz continued, speaking faster as he ran out of time, and I personally believe it could help. Hadn't heard that before, Ducey said.
Yeah.
I have absolutely probably, no information.
Oh, someone would say not heard that before about something
I look at Ducey, and I think it's a different denial. He looks like a pothead. He looks like when he gets off set, he goes back and he's one of those closet potheads. So
I think he was maybe referring to his audience. You know, like, I'm sorry you had to hear that or something, you know.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you had to hear about this devil's lettuce. Might be a good thing. So here's another example of medical advances being stifled by government. And it's mm-hmm. absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, not allowed to study it.
Right. I talked about this, I think it was last week. A friend of the show, Kevin McKernan, had to go to Europe to study it. And I'm not really sure if it's because the drug companies are so well connected here that they can basically stamp out competition by using their political connections, or if it's just the Puritan aspect of most of the control freaks that say, no, that I saw Reefer Madness. This is devil's lettuce. You can't use it. It can't possibly use for anything good. You know, and everybody knows that if you smoke weed one time, you'll turn into a cat. So it's just absolute idiocy. So
it is too. And there are tons of studies out there that have shown that it has medical benefits, which means it shouldn't be on Schedule I, but because it's on Schedule I, you know, well, those studies don't count or whatever, you know? So it's like,
It's truly amazing to have something on Schedule I that has no known overdose level, no fatal dose.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Here's something for you. Schedule I isn't, you know, what, you know, how dangerous the drug is. You know, it's, you know, how, if it doesn't have any medical benefits. And we all know, everyone knows marijuana has medical benefits. I mean, there's tons of research out there that shows that. I mean, we even have medical marijuana programs all across the United States. You know,
like, as a matter of fact, medical cannabis is legal here in Michigan, and there's been a number of SWAT raids where I think Oakland County's kind of famous for this, where the sheriff's department will go in there and do a raid on a place. And I think they're searching more for they're enforcing regulation rather than prohibition. They used to enforce prohibition. Now it's regulation.
They are.
And there's absolutely crazy regulations that have to be followed, and it's to follow all this stuff, you'd go out of business.
Well, they're getting what they're doing now is they're actually making up. They're stealing patient information, right? And they're making up fake patient cards with real patient information on it with, you know, now it's the cop's picture on it, right? The cop's going into the medical marijuana shops. Then they're purchasing stuff with this card that's, you know, a legit card made by the state of Michigan, looks identical to the other cards with legit information on it, but it has the cop's picture on it. And then they're arresting the people for selling to someone who isn't a patient. That's what they're doing now to skirt the law. It's crazy.
Not enough real crime that they have to create fake crime.
Yep.
And we will be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Cool. Freedom Fiends. Final act. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Randy and James. And from the here, have some more government file. Down in Florida.
No thanks, I'm trying to give it up.
Down in Florida, they've recently been devastated and just absolutely ravaged by a destructive force. And a couple of hurricanes have gone through there this year, too. And that horrible destructive force has been government. First article, we're going to do two stories here. The first one is from Reason.com. Hours after Hurricane Irma, Miami-Dade County tickets residents for code violations. Mere hours after Hurricane Irma, Miami-Dade County was ticketing residents for building code violations on their wrecked properties.
For fallen trees, things.
Yeah.
Right?
Soso Perez was helping his neighbors.
Falling down fences.
Yeah. Soso Perez was helping his neighbors remove some fallen trees blocking their street when a county code enforcer rolled up and issued him a safety notice for having a downed fence. I laughed, Perez tells WSBN-TV. I thought he was kidding. You're kidding, right? We just had a hurricane 6 hours ago. It wasn't a joke. The official told Perez that the down fence, which encloses a pool, was a safety hazard. I wonder if they're going to put a safety fence around the oceans. But anyway, and that if it wasn't fixed by the time
they got to build
returned,
a wall to keep the hurricanes out, right?
Yeah, well, it'll keep Jose
and
out.
Make the hurricane pay for it.
Yeah.
Make Mother Nature pay for it. We're going to build a wall around Florida to make Mother Nature pay for it.
And if the fence wasn't fixed by the time the bureaucrat returned, Perez would be hit with a fine. The official then hung the safety citation on the portion of Perez's fence that remained standing. So there's like one post still up, and he attached the citation to it, leaving him and his neighbors to finish cleaning the debris from their street. Now, I've heard of people that have gone and chopped up down trees that were in the street up here in Michigan. Well, actually, down in James's area, and they've gotten ticketed for cutting trees. You know, because that's like the city's job or something like that. It's absolutely idiotic. But anyway, yeah. They've said here, have some government. You know, you have code violations, and I think the only reason that they weren't doing the code violations during the storm was because they didn't want their goons to get hurt. And plus, you know, stuff wasn't sufficiently broken yet.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. The government would go around and send their goons around 6 hours after a hurricane to go cite people for stuff that they're currently, you know, working on getting cleaned up.
Yeah. And to top it off, you got the stores are closed. It's not like you go down to Lowe's, Home Depot, Menards, or anything like that and say, hey, I need new fencing materials.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm going to get a ticket. So this is just absolutely ridiculous. So the update to the story.
It reminds me of when I got pulled over for during a blizzard, and I got pulled over and cited for having an obstructed license plate because there was snow on my license plate during a blizzard.
Yeah.
This reminds me of that. Like,
this. Just, you're making that up, right?
No, yeah. It happened.
No. No, it does happen. Maybe
the tickets are the snow.
Yes, they both happen. So anyway, maybe we need to review that story about the court okaying the barring of cops with high IQs as applicants. So anyway, the update to the story. After publication, Reason received comment from Miami-Dade County with the following explanation. We were looking to advise residents of the following hazards on their properties that they may not have been aware of, but that pose a life safety threat. Damaged structures that rendered them unsafe, unsecured pools with no barriers, electrical hazards, down lines, damaged meters, and gas hazards, damaged meters. If any of these hazards were found, our inspectors gave out a safety notice, which is neither a notice of violation, warning, or a citation. That means there is no fine attached. Oh, okay. So they're just going around being jerks.
They were just helping.
Yeah.
So there's a fine attached to mine.
Yes. So the final story here is Monroe County Sheriff's Office, Florida Keys. They were harassing people that were selling generators and gasoline without a license or permission from Monroe County to be there. So back in the USSR, 1980, they said, "We will strangle the private market and drown it in a bathtub. Government will control the economy." The USSA in 2017 says, "Hold my Budweiser, comrade, and watch this." Ah, bunch of dirty, filthy state counties. Anyway, thanks for coming out tonight, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
God bless the state. Worms.
God bleep the state.